guess this is the red side of the table.
All right.
I don't know who else is coming in.
So the guys from Sys Administrator should be here. And I can go and dig. I can go find them. You guys can just bullshit on here though. So get ready. I think all the feet should be open.
We're getting what? Shit.
Did we just get on?
I got a text like right at like 11:30,
yeah,
saying that the mics are dead, like there's no audio coming off the board.
Wait, you're fucking kidding me, right?
We heard it in our headphones.
I'm hearing it out there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Right. Do you hear me right now when I speak?
Are the speakers up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can hear you. Just
and
fine.
That's the internet feed?
That's the internet.
Okay. All right, so that's working.
Lol trolling.
Right, it's doing some business here for a second. Tell us how your experience has been thus far. What is this, your 60th hope?
Oh, I think so.
67th?
I believe. I gotta check the hash marks that I tattoo in my hand.
Could it have been Periscope that was having an issue?
Oh, yeah, that could have been.
So,
yeah.
I don't know.
That's not important then.
Yeah, so you should take the
down. Yeah, okay.
No.
Whatever.
It's dark. Yeah. You can't see anything. Did you hear anything? Yeah. So so we're getting reports that you can hear things on the Periscope but not see them.
Can people see us at all? It's radio.
Experimenting with, I'm typing here as well. Experimenting with streaming through Periscope. Do you even know what Periscope is?
I learned about it due to that recent congressional action.
Yes. I'm sure Twitter is super excited. Like, wow, people know what Periscope is now, and they'll start using it. I'm experimenting with streaming from this GoPro to my phone.
Oh, there it is. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, and then it goes to my phone, and then my phone periscopes the GoPro feed.
Super, super HackerCon.
Yeah, so I have my own little microcosm of an Internet of Things. I have an intranet of things.
That was one of my favorite contests at Nauticon, was the Anything But Ethernet contest, where you had to transmit data over the most seriously janky, you know, hack together assemblage of possible broadcast methods.
Would you get to only choose from things on the table, and it was just like somebody opens a garbage bag and then...
No, I think the actual... I don't know if it had to be all definable under any RFC or if it was totally open-ended, but everything from, you know, you'd have... The data would come in and just be put through a modem for some reason, down a bit of silver satin to another modem on the other side of the room.
It's like intentionally janky.
Yeah, and then, you know...
So you get jank points.
Like, yeah, you
cool.
Use laser for point-to-point down the hallway. And I remember Pinguino standing there being like, no, step out of the hall. Stop. Step over it. Packet loss. So people are like, just trying to get somewhere.
They're like, step over what? Because it's a laser? Like,
yeah.
Doing weird pantomime.
Yeah.
Is it this?
Yeah. Actually, no, it wasn't. Shoot, it wasn't Pinguino. It was Lee. It was Lee Lee Hollywell.
It was the goal distance? With distance for...
I think the goal was just how many intermediary methodologies you could employ and still have it work.
Got it.
I always wanted to devise some solution. I never built this because Nauticon ended, but I wanted to basically take all the ones and zeros in a byte stream and use, like, basically solenoids and a giant reservoir of black and white marbles and have them, like, fire off and, like, start shooting them down through a tube.
You would never have enough marbles. Like,
I don't
even
know.
Like, even just 1 kilobyte.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. They would all wind up. They would have to go down a tube and run down the plastic tube. It's a clear acrylic tube.
Okay.
And an optical sensor.
Oh, and they would just feed back.
An optical sensor would read the data. But then I thought it would be funnier if at the other end, a different sensor would, like, to kick them out into 2 buckets.
Yeah.
And then manually you'd need a runner to just run buckets back as fast as he or she could.
Like,
pour them in the upper, like,
just
stand
for
on
the
a,
humor of requiring humor. A, yeah.
So, like, run up a ladder and, like, dump them in the top of the giant hopper. Like, get back here, there's more black pellets coming down.
Just constant panic.
Oh, that would be purely.
That would be a good game, and then you just have like teams and like see who can keep the data stream running the longest before like there's a hiccup and somebody drops the bucket and marbles go everywhere and people start crying. And
yeah. Compression compression becomes key at that point.
Yeah, that'd be great. Make them have to like climb a really tall ladder with the bucket to like dump it into some unnecessarily tall structure.
Yeah.
That's great.
I feel like you could also for to raise money for charity. If you didn't like the team participating, you'd have a little mini catapult on a table, and for a buck, you could try to catapult like the wrong color into one of the hoppers just to add like bit errors.
Yeah, see if because you wouldn't be implementing like CRC or anything.
Fuck no. Because
it'd be amazing if you did.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
You'd have to increase the number of marbles by like 30%, but. That's a great idea. Just start shooting them in there.
Oh,
Hope doesn't have contests like that. I feel like that's something that's missing here. Yeah, Hope has a lot of weird, unique things, but they don't really do contests.
Mm-hmm. There is the new dart-based game over at the Lockpick Village. If we get that up and running soon, we just need to get some fresh locks so that they're, we have multiple. It's called the Gong Game. I built this. I ran it at Shaka Khan last week. And the idea is three participants all sitting at a table next to each other. They all have a container in front of them that's locked. Start of the gun, boom, go. Everyone tries to get the container open. You find within this container a single Nerf gun with a single shot dart in it.
Sure.
Now, you have this Nerf gun because down across the way, all these three players are facing a gong. And you want to ring the gong. Now, you cock the gun, you pull it, patoom, and you probably miss because it's a Nerf gun and it sucks.
Right.
But in front of your package that you just opened, there are also a small, medium, and large package with a weak, medium, and hard lock containing 1, 3, or 10 more darts. And you can burn more time, obviously, but you can, oh man, I wonder if I can, I need another dart, I'll pick the easy lock. But if you're looking, you're like, oh, this person, they've almost got their gun open. I don't want to waste time. Maybe just the medium lock and I'll get... But if you look and like nobody's got their darts open yet, you're like, well, I'll just try to pick the hard lock and get 10 darts and then I'll really be set and I'll better hit this son of a bitch.
Right, except then like you've wasted all your time trying to get that hard lock open and somebody else hit the gong in their first hit.
Oh, yeah. It gets nutty to see how that goes down. So it was anything... We've learned in Tool that anything involving dart guns is fun.
I feel like that's like not a lesson you would need to learn. It seems like an inherent knowledge... Like, did you say dart gun?
Yeah.
I assume that's fun.
Well, I actually think I want to incorporate this into a game out of the DEF CON shoot one year with actual wooden, like ammo and rifle boxes. So you, like, start off the starting line, run down the field, find a big wooden crate, pick the lock to get the freaking rifle out of it with one, half mag loaded. And then, shoot. If you run out of ammo, you got to run over here, pick this small, ammo can.
Sure. Horrifically, unrealistic.
Of course, but so is a rifle spinning in the middle of the air in most, games that you pick it up, or so is surviving and healing from shotgun blast to the face by eating cheeseburgers or whatever else video game conventions are. So,
eating food you found in holes in walls.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is what I needed. An entire turkey.
Mysterious hidden dungeon roasted wall chicken.
That wall chick. That was, I remember Castlevania.
Yeah, exactly.
On the Nintendo. You just break open the wall, like, yeah, thank God I found some chicken in this wall, or I'd have died.
Yeah, yeah. There's a guy, Ego Raptor, who made some videos about the various Castlevania series. They were called Sequelitis. And if you're into gaming, talking about how Castlevania 2 is a very bad sequel. But yeah, he was talking about that. He's like, oh yeah, dungeon wall chicken. That was. They didn't have that in number two. You had to make a pilgrimage back to town and, I guess, go to the church.
There were two, very different games. And then the third one was, the first with just more.
Yeah.
But you had the three characters you could play.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah. That was fun as shit.
Yeah. And then I got the SNES, and that's when I loved, Castlevania 4. I played the shit out of it.
What was that graphic engine they implemented in it that made the background all spinny? They had a name for it. Mode 7.
Mode 7.
And everyone was like, it's got Mode 7. Nobody knew what it meant.
Right. Same thing F-Zero's got. Ooh.
Yeah, and what part of F-Zero was Mode 7? Oh, it's the one that made it look so cool. Shit, I got an SNES. That's what matters. That's what makes me look cool. And it did, man. Mm-hmm. I bought my first one off a kid in school who needed drug money. And, like, all I wanted was that Super Nintendo. And he sold me the Super Nintendo and, like, seven games. And then he had the Super Scope, the gun, like, shoulder-mounted bazooka. $100
Did that have any games except, like, Mole Patrol or something? I don't remember what it was. I remember, like, some kid...
I don't remember Mole Patrol.
What game did Super Scope use?
There was one game I played that was kind of like a Gundam-style game where you just had an enemy that floated around the screen and shot at you while you shot at it. That's the only one I can think of at the top of my head. I know it came with a cartridge that had, like, six shooting games on it, all in one. They're all, like, basic, like, Mole Patrol.
Yeah, I just remember ever seeing this one whack-a-mole game at somebody's house.
Yeah, that was probably on, like, the default cartridge.
Yeah.
A bunch of garbage games. Like, I don't know, but kids like guns. Just make a gun for this, and then just make it do something.
And make it huge.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It was shoulder-mounted.
Yeah.
Oh, it took like, 8D batteries.
You got to get the weight right.
Yeah, it was dead halfway through the game. Like, it didn't use lasers. It just used, like, a bunch of actual light bulbs.
Like incandescent.
Yeah, like incandescent lights.
Oh, man.
And I played the shit out of it, so what's up?
Oh, of course.
In my basement with my shoulder-mounted gun. Mm-hmm. The nerdiest kid alive. Hope nobody looks in the window to see that. Mm-hmm. But I paid $100 for that setup.
Solid.
Worth every penny.
Did the other kid feel he got a value out of his drugs, do you think?
I did not ask. I don't have contact with him anymore. That would be great to, like, call him up. Like, how were those drugs that one time?
I bet that would make the radio program very interesting if we could have calls like that.
Yeah.
It's like when somebody knows...
This is Johnny from 8th grade gym class. The kid whose pants you pulled down so often that he just stopped wearing pants. Mm-hmm. So I got a question for you. Remember all those drugs you bought? How did that work out?
Yeah, it was good value at the time.
I feel like I got more, like, a more efficient value out of that Super Nintendo than anyone could ever get out of drugs.
I don't know. It depends on the drugs, I guess.
I invested many hours. Drugs, like, there's a max limit you can get hours of value out of, like, per $100. You don't get a lifetime of entertainment
in
decades. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Like,
I got you.
I'm sure the drugs were, like, top-notch. Like, high-quality, whatever kids smoke these days. Or those days. What were we smoking? Salvia was big at that time. Remember Salvia? Is that still a thing?
I'm not sure. There's no YouTube videos trending about it anymore, so I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's this synthetic marijuana.
Which just sounds wrong to
me.
Yeah,
like, and people are still dying from it. Like, that's what I see.
Synthetic marijuana is like the fleshlight of sex. Like...
No, because it's not, at least...
Well, the thing is, like, you know there's regular sex out there you can just have. Like, yeah. You could fuck actual trim.
Yeah,
but
like, and sure, like, you're
maybe
not,
the fleshlight's just amazing. I've
you're
never
not gonna just
it.
Go outside and pick up a 9 or a 10. I mean, Deviant and I may, but I mean, in general, like, that's not. But like, your fleshlight's not a 9 or a 10.
I don't.
Your thrustlight's a 0.
Maybe.
I mean, it's in the negative numbers because if we're talking just physical beauty, you ever seen a fleshlight?
They're very scary.
If you found one and had not seen one before.
You
and did not know what it was, you'd be terrified.
You'd be very scared.
Right, it's just a vagina on a stick. And, yeah, and that's horrifying.
But like, yeah, who are the people that are having trouble finding marijuana? Is cannabis just not accessible somewhere in this world right now?
Especially because I found, like, the deeper you go into rural areas, like, the easier it becomes to find...
Yeah.
Like, the less dense the population...
What is the market for synthetic marijuana is really the... If you know, call us on Radio Statler and explain why in the free market world this is a thing. How is this still a thing?
I don't know. We don't have phones anymore. Actually, there's a phone back here.
Really?
And it's plugged into a DI box.
Call one of us, then we'll know the number, and we can tell people to call it.
Look at this phone.
Oh, wow. That was the sound of that phone hitting the table.
I have headphones on.
Does it have a dial tone?
Dial tone. What's up with the phone?
Does the phone work?
Is it plugged in?
Yes.
Theoretically, that should work.
We tried turning it off and on.
Only.
So oh, it's internal only?
It's internal only, so you can call... Okay. You can call, like, InfoDesk, you can call...
We can call InfoDesk and ask them about the market for synthetic marijuana.
Yes.
They would probably have that information.
Do you know their extension?
There's no dial tone.
There's no dial tone, then it's probably not
it's
working.
Ultra dead.
Our sysadmins are going to be down in 5 to 10 minutes.
All right.
Just in time for our slot to be over.
Yeah.
There's no power.
You guys have another like 45 minutes.
I feel like this DI box should have power, right?
I mean, it would be great, except that, you know, it's not plugged into the phone or anything, so. But.
Ooh, now he's solving a problem.
Yeah, the lights won't come on. That's how I know it's broke. That's the extent of my DI troubleshooting skills.
If the lights aren't in or the magic smoke comes out, you know it, no worko.
Right. Unless the lights are bad, because they're all red. Because this is from a time when LEDs were only red.
Oh, man, I miss that age.
Yes.
Can we all agree, fuck blue LEDs.
Holy shit. Yeah, what? Especially on things that are supposed to face you, like anything you would put in your entertainment center at home. Like, why does everything I buy have blue LEDs that would shine at your couch? Like, whose idea was this?
Yeah.
Taiwan? Thailand?
Something I'm very proud to have, and I travel with all the time. This is a little life hacker tip, because apparently anything is a life hack now, right? If you use a Dymo labeler, which we do, like back at the office for bins of parts and everything, the little, like we use the black media that prints white. So the little black, whenever the Dymo labeler is printing out, its labels, in between each label it does a cut, you know, like slice, slice, slice. So you get these Excelsior sort of squares, these little half inch by half inch black squares for no reason. I started saving all of them in a little Ziploc bag, and they're always in my travel kit. And now in hotel rooms, I put these little black squares over like every fucking piece of electronics in every hotel I'm in, and just black out the stupid LEDs.
I just use electrical tape.
Well,
you made this a process.
See, I get to
like
feel
electronic equipment involved in the generation of these little black dots, and like just tear off a nub of electrical tape.
I get to feel like I'm reusing something that would have been otherwise just garbage.
All right, that's valid.
That's fair.
Take the high road on that one, you asshole.
You could just say that I'm really just trash picking at that point. It's my own trash, so I feel.
But then you're repurposing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely more. That it makes you a better
friendly.
That makes you better than other people. That is quantifiable.
I'm the guy who thinks recycling is a big scam, so that's kind of ironic.
Or I'm tweeting out our show here.
You should. I use the electrical tape a bit. I actually have some old keyboards, like some ridiculously old ones, because back when PS2 was like a thing, I had like these really old fucking keyboards. I'd leave the computer on all night, but the green LEDs on the keyboard were so bright. You would think that like the keyboard would not keep you awake, but it totally did.
Now, the devil's advocate in me does want to point out that with the depression of merely three keys, scroll lock, caps lock, and num lock, you wouldn't have LEDs on the keyboard, illuminated.
That is correct.
Okay.
But, on the other hand,
it's really inconvenient to have to push that numlock key once a day.
That is
true.
It's
the frustration because
it's all
you have
the way over here, for one.
Well, did anyone ever use the far right pad as anything but a number pad? Like, why was numlock a thing? Someone was like, I really need 8, you know, directional arrows all around.
I feel like I did use the 8 directional arrows for like old DOS, certain DOS games.
Yeah,
like
back in the day. I think the original Pirates, actually, the sword fighting mechanics for it.
Yeah,
was on.
I don't remember what I played, but I do remember it being amazing that like those corner keys worked.
Mm.
So totally relevant by today's standards, and I'm super glad we maintain that reverse compatibility for something that can easily just be mapped out to any other keys now. Really cool. I'm glad we have break keys still on. And scroll lock,
right.
Scroll lock, personal favorite.
Oh.
I'm glad that Scrolog has a light that still lights up. That's neat.
No, but actually my final solution that I've come to is to not sleep in the same room as the computer. That seems to alleviate all need to block out the light from the
Occam's razor.
It took me a while. I got so used to sleeping in a room that had, well, when I was growing up, like many computers in it. That was kind of like my white noise, you know? When I'd be somewhere that was dead silent, I kind of was like, this is... The girl I'm seeing now, she likes a little noise in the room, too. But, yeah, I've been in relationships
that,
where...
That sounds like
an innuendo?
No, it's...
My girl likes a little noise in the room.
If you know what I mean.
You know what I mean. Hum her a little tune.
Jesus.
You dirty birdie.
But yeah, back when I, no, you know, it's interesting though. Like your relationships drive your sleep conditions. That whole like, you know, yeah, which side of the bed is your who's like, you know, once you the first couple nights in a relationship, you better have chosen that right side of the bed because, hey, it's yours now for 3 years.
Yeah, for until you get rid of her. already. Because, like, have you ever been in a relationship where you at some point swap sides of the bed, like, permanently?
It's
like,
never happened.
Right. That doesn't happen. That's a permanent thing. That is a lifetime choice.
It's not a lifetime choice. You can change when you move. If you rearrange the furniture, you can change sides. You can, if you move apartments.
Yeah, like, anything that, it puts the discussion on the table.
Yeah, so, like. You can definitely. There are ways to change it up. It's just not like you can't just start that conversation to like, you know what? I think we should change sides.
Yeah,
like that's we should do that. I mean, you could probably have that conversation, but I don't think anybody would actually think about having
it would,
that.
It would come across as socially really weird. It's literally like asking for a new seat in the middle of the meal.
You know, that's not a battery pack. You have to actually plug that into an outlet.
I know. Lightest battery pack ever.
Yeah. Oh, it's got an LED. Who wants to vote on what color we think it is?
Spoiler alert, it's green.
I don't know.
More intrusive than amber, but still it's not that blue.
Yeah, I like green LEDs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Blue is terrible.
I just liked when everything was red. That was very soft. Very,
that is
like,
true.
You know. But then, like, red became broke. You know, indicator. And
right.
Amber, fuck, Amber's like, it's not quite working, it's booting, or it's, you know, something is undervolted.
Something may or may not be
right.
Fucked, but, you know, it's okay. It's not completely fucked. It's
anybody ever seen a device that purposefully used a purple LED ever?
No.
Yes.
You really?
I think so. I think my cable modem has, like, some purple LEDs.
Really?
What?
Wow.
I think so. I could be full
cable
of shit.
Cable modem by
just like
Spencer Gifts.
Yeah, for what?
What does that indicate? That's awesome.
I don't fucking remember. It's
yeah, because like that's not a wavelength your eye picks up easily. So like it's weird to use that as an indicator bulb for anything. So it has to be something like super unimportant.
Or the most important.
Oh man. So speaking of synthetic marijuana.
Absolutely.
Here, no. I'm sitting here. Last night.
Did you say you had some last night?
Well, I had a lot.
Did you announce that on the air?
A lot of synthetic. No, I didn't have any.
So I think the draw of synthetic marijuana is that I think it's legal.
Really?
I think you can just go to a head shop and purchase some.
This
can anybody verify that? Corroborate my claims? I know we.
This will loop back to my initial quandary, though, is like cannabis, while. Quote, I'm making air quotes, illegal. Is it, like, really illegal? Because it's not, like, illegal. Like, because everyone, we're looking, you're on the radio, you can't see, everyone around this table is white. So, cannabis, pretty not illegal for us. I'm sorry.
Right,
sorry, people of color. That,
that was going to be my interjection.
Law enforcement fucks you in the ass
also
on that
one. Also, to be fair, I'm from Colorado.
Yeah.
So, literally, legal.
Yeah.
I was going to say, like, until we stop imprisoning people...
Yeah.
For mere possession of it.
Yeah. Super unjust, but like,
yeah.
My privilege is very well defined. I'm very aware of it. Like,
so what you're saying is please start arresting white people. That's your solution? Is that...
You know, enough people get arrested for something dumb. That's kind of what changes shit.
And the good news is we don't have enough people in jail yet, so you're really helping the problem.
Right, of course. No,
I actually don't smoke, despite what you would think I'm looking at me, but...
You know, what, like, as you came in and I said that, that was at what was going through my head. I'm like, this. I bet this dude's totally straight edge, and I'm sitting here like, no, look at this stoned-ass motherfucker.
I drank. I probably look stoned.
We literally. It's the dreads. It's just
it is.
A, it's a stereotype that you're going to have to roll with.
No, I know. I actually have it for, like, religious reasons, which is the most ironic part of it, but.
Is it? I feel like I know a lot of marijuana smokers are super religious.
No, I'm not Rastafari. It's a,
Christianity.
No, you don't know your own religion?
No,
it's a very deeply held conviction, obviously.
Yeah, right. My dad told me once.
No, there's a specific vow you take where you don't cut or comb your hair. It's Christianity, but it's like a
One of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so we literally just woke up about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, is that where you were? Because we were like, oh, classic blue team taking 25 minutes to find me. That's our show, folks.
We'll never get a better singer.
Well, shit.
Oh,
shit. You know what? I'm just going to... That's it. That's done.
Wow. Yeah, now I'm going to spend 70 hours writing this report up for the 4 minutes it took me to own you.
So who do we have here from both sides of the table?
Like, I'm Brent. I go by Square Root.
And I'm Jonathan. I go by Jathan on Freenode and such.
Yeah, I'm with Foxy Proxy.
Oh, on the internet?
Yeah, I'm employed by CU, but we're both hosts of SysAdmin's Trivia.
Are you, did you say with Foxy Proxy? That's neat. I did not know they had paid employees.
Well, we have, like, services, too. So I don't do anything plug and development. But, yeah. We run a podcast specifically for system administrators and system engineers and things like that.
Okay.
Do
you want to give a plug for where to find that?
GetFoxyProxy.org.
Okay. No, I think he was talking about
the podcast.
Oh, the podcast.
Yeah,
the
say
podcast.
Something about your
actually here. Are you positive you don't smoke?
Come on, man.
My excuse is that I literally left here less than 6 hours ago.
Yeah, you were here like all night.
I think I might.
And you guys left a horrible mess. Like, Beaches came in this morning. Like, Cory Doctorow was coming in to do an interview, and Beaches comes in and just starts, like, arm loading stuff off the table. There's just beer cans and wine bottles. Like, who brought wine?
I don't know what happened.
Or is that whiskey there?
That is apple whiskey.
I don't like it, for the record.
Because it's not Laird's. Laird's Brothers from Jersey represent. That is where you get your apple whiskey. I don't know who the hell this is.
Do you guys have Twitter handles?
Yeah.
Do you tweet?
I'm J.R. DeMacy. J.R.DEMASI.
I believe I'm at Brent Sander, but the podcast is... Oh, by the way, sysadministrivia.com. It's sysadmin and then is trivia, but it's a...
Yeah. Let's see what you did there.
Hey, spell it again. You're J.R.D.
D-E-M-A-S-I.
There you are.
The podcast is...
Hi, Mom.
We're already following each other, actually. At S...
Well, I'm doing it from the Radio Statler account here.
Okay. You know what? I'm just going to write it down, because I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. But
just trying to plug you, man.
Well, that's the thing. I'm so out of it.
Say the letters in the order that they appear in your handle.
Okay. SYSADM _.
Yeah.
PODCAST. I can't believe I had to write that down, but...
That's funny.
This is going bad for us already.
Okay. Yeah, Twitter doesn't let you have admin in your name, as it turns out. But we had already picked the name.
Weird.
Yeah. Or even in, like, the display name. So we have to use, like, an ad symbol.
Okay. Do we have a moderator for this? Has anybody?
No,
okay.
I thought Beaches was going, but he just skipped out.
I feel what happened is we all got stuffed in a room and were told go.
Yeah, moderator, it's a red team, blue team. The moderator is a scoping document.
Like. Yeah. Let's go. I'm going to read the SOW on the air. It's only 104 pages, so let's get through this real quick.
On this side of the table, we obviously have the voice of Johnny Christmas.
Yeah, hi, Johnny Christmas. I don't think I've announced myself all morning. People have been like, there's some asshole in the air this day today. It's Johnny Christmas. How you guys doing? And then sharing the side of the table with me is Deviant Alam.
Yes, indeed.
What was your first hope, Deviant?
Oof, H2K.
All right, same here. Yeah. You're one of the few that shares that seniority with me.
Right on.
I've been like as every next hope happens, or more hopes happen, because there wasn't one next hope. I get more and more enjoyment out of like asking people, "When's your first hope?" And they're like, "Oh, hope 9, or the last hope." And I'm like, man, I've been coming 16 years to this.
Yeah,
nonsense.
It blows you, because every other year. So when you think, you're like, oh, that was that like 3 hopes ago? You're like, yeah, that was 6 effing years ago, if that's the case. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And I love the every other year. And that was so cool. Because, like, 2 years is enough for someone's life to change. And so when you, and back in the day, social media was not anywhere near as big as it was now. So, like, you just wouldn't talk to people for 2 years. And then you'd come across them in hope again. Mm-hmm. And, like, their kid is 2 years old now, and like when he last saw him, they had no kid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, what is this?
Yeah, last hope is my first hope. So.
Mm.
Wow.
But now, Johnny, are you also a single-digit DEFCONer?
Yes. DEFCON 8 was my
first
one.
Oh, yeah. Teaming up, like, bro-fist on that.
Why 8? Or was that also your first DEFCON? Yeah, shit, man. And it took us, all, like, 15 years to start talking to each other?
Yeah, exactly. That's wild. Like, we've probably been running into each other at parties or something, but I'm going to say there was a Carolina con a couple of years. Was that the first time we actually just got to sit and chill? What was the first con we actually spent hanging out and was like, this person's awesome. I want to spend more time with this person.
I want to say, I think it was DerbyCon last year.
Oh, that was, yeah, you know what? That's because I was rooming with Rance, and you were hanging with Rance.
We were hanging out and not doing anything bad.
Of course not.
And there was no issues with the hotel staff whatsoever.
No.
With
Rance and his respiratory, cancer, there's no way anyone would smoke anything in the room. Right. Because that would be irresponsible.
Out of your mind? How can you even suggest that?
Right.
Hey, what do you say we actually get talking?
Sure.
No, okay.
Sure.
So I have some questions last night.
This
is
Johnny and Deviant nostalgia
Sorry,
hour.
Come on, go on.
I'm like, you guys are like a bunch of old men bullshitting on a porch. Yeah.
Sorry, reminiscing about our dead friend that we love, but let's get into this tech stuff.
Yeah, my friends are dead too, buddy.
Go on,
moving
please.
Moving on.
I feel dead, if it makes any difference. Do you feel that the red team or blue team is viewed as more glamorously?
Oh, come on.
Like, do you have pre-written questions?
I do.
That's
why I didn't come down last night.
This is upping the production value. I don't know if this is a gimme of a question, but like...
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah.
Red team or blue team, more sexy.
Yeah. Oh, more sexy?
More sexy.
Do you mean... Oh, so from like a professional, like what do I want to do more?
Sure, yeah.
Oh, okay. You were in the middle of that answer.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like part of our industry is the shit that... Oh, no one wants to be blue team. Like, all the talks about everything about break it and then, like, burn everything down and walk away. That's why, like, Bruce Potter and everyone, like, at ShmooCon, they started the Defend It track a year or two ago because they're like, look, everything's about breaking things and it can't always be breaking. But let's be honest, when you've got people at their first con and they meet somebody, they are invariably running up to a lot of red teamers being like, can I do what you do? Like, what I think the real answer is the perception of the job of red teamer is more sexy than the public what people perceive is the job of a blue teamer.
I think that's a good distinction.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, when you break into something, too, you guys probably get to jump up and down and wave your arms.
Oh, yeah.
And when we fix something, it's just like, all right, well, now I got to fix something else. So it's like there's no reason to jump.
Yeah.
We have really boring cons. Like Lopsa.
I imagine actually our entire working environment, coworkers, literally everything about our job is probably more boring.
Oh man, I as an ex SecOps engineer, and I loved that job, and my company got bought out, and they wanted us all to move to Florida, and we were all like, no thanks. I had a fun ass team. We had a blast. Like everyone on my team was cool as hell. We all bought motorcycles. And, like, we were stereotypically badass at that point.
They were for work motorcycles.
Right. Oh, well, like our VP was legitimately frightened because we would do these like weekend long trips out in the middle of nowhere. And he's like, all right, so you're all just on motorcycles? Yeah, we'll be back Monday. Don't worry. All right. But like I'm at risk of losing my entire SecOps team.
So well, when all of you get hit by a bus?
Right. He was like, what happens when that bus mows you all down? We're like, right. Well, there's a lot of...
It's documentation.
Yeah. Right. It's on the wiki. Just look at the wiki. I put everything in the wiki. You can run all the appliances. It's all on the wiki. Don't worry about it.
So you can have a lot of fun even as a blue teamer, but the idea of recognition, like red team recognition comes from, oh my God, look at everything we broke. And blue team recognition, like the recognition is, oh look, nothing happened.
You're not being noticed.
Right. Yeah, you're not being, in fact, that's kind of funny. The girl that you met, Sherry, I dated her for years, like her company LMG, they just steered into that whole mantra because their marketing, it was brilliant. Their new marketing is LMG Security, we make nothing happen. That's their slogan.
It's like, the old IT trope of like, you're not doing anything because, or either, how is it? Either you're not doing anything because nothing's broken, and then because nothing's broken, they don't think you do anything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, so you have a very quiet, you want it to be as quiet as possible around you.
Yeah.
If you're jumping up and down screaming.
What is your biggest frustration with that sort of cycle of recognition, non-recognition as blue teamers?
I mean, most of it's just, I say explaining to other people what we do that aren't in the industry. Like, you can say, like, oh, yeah, we get companies pay us to test the security by breaking into their boxes. And they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense, whatever, you know. Like, I've seen Mr. Robot, you know. But, like, with us, it's like, we get paid to stop the people who break in, you know? And they're like,
yeah.
Who is breaking in? Like, why? Who?
Just show them pictures. Here, him.
Yeah.
Be like, carry a picture, be like, this guy. And they're like, yeah, oh, him.
I'll just carry a picture of DJ.
Do you have, like, cool phrases you use to try and, like, get people to come around? Like, when they're like, what do you do? And you, what's your, like...
My go-to?
How do you pick up a...
A
partner. We have to be gender neutral now.
I generally just go by I help keep the internet running. Mm-hmm. And that's like the simplest explanation I can give.
So I work...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I work in HPC, so I just carry around literally a picture of the cluster, and I'm just, look at all these computers. Those are mine.
Yeah, I do that. This is me at work.
Yeah.
I'd love to ask one thing now. Mm-hmm. People love to, maybe this is true or false, like people say, oh, but breaches are getting worse all the time and there's the industry. Is this an actual true trend? Like, because people love to bitch. They're like, our industry costs more every year, but we lose more data every year. And I just think the industry is growing. Is that why it costs more and our losses really
lost? I think
we're
just publicizing it more. Mm-hmm. Like social media is just this growing monster at this point, and I feel like it's just inevitable that, like... The rates of these things might not change, but the vocality of them, I guess? Yeah, like, you just hear about them more like
that. Right. Are you saying that it's more like how we currently live in the safest time ever in human history, however, we're hearing more and more about shootings than we ever have because we just have so much access to information.
Exactly like that.
And the other thing is, you know, for a while, companies, if they wanted to run, you know, a web server or something else, they hosted that all in-house. But now we see people moving to the cloud. So you have one cloud-based company, and I just put that in air quotes, that gets a breach, and all of a sudden you have 50 large companies affected that all use that same cloud service.
That's true. And so, like, the companies that are affected by a breach are not necessarily the ones who were breached per se.
Not personally, but they used a service or you know, they outsourced to somebody who was breached.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I used to just tell... the phrase I used when I was blue teaming was, I build defensive networks to defend against hackers. And so, like, you still get to put the word hacker in there. You get defensive network, which is a very action-sounding... So they sexy it up. It can be sexy.
There you go. Yeah, we'll make it sound a little bit sexy.
And to counter that, like, on the red team side, because, a lot of people think that that everything we do is just smash and grab. It's a lot of barking up wrong trees. Barking up right trees that end up just not having anything on the other... at the top of them. It's a lot of waiting for scripts to finish and passwords to crack. And then it's a lot of report writing.
It is
just an insane amount of report writing.
I follow a lot of InfoSec on Twitter. I already follow both of you. Like, yeah, like,
you're that guy.
Yeah, I'm that guy.
My follower.
And like, if there's one thing I see often, it's just the sheer amount of just boring ass paperwork that goes into it, and I'm glad I don't need
Who's
to do a
posting
lot of that.
Their boring ass paperwork.
Not the actual paperwork.
Are you doing?
I see bitching. I see bitching about it a whole lot. Yeah, you know. So
that's why I love physical. All like our reports are so image and video heavy. It's
yeah.
great.
Yeah, it's true. Like
yeah, very true.
Physical assessments are definitely like my favorite as far as the report writing goes for sure.
Yeah. Mm.
We just don't get a lot of them at my company.
Okay. Do you wear like pin cams or anything so you could just be documenting crazy stuff all the time?
What I do is I usually wear shirts that have a breast pocket, and I put my iPhone in the breast pocket, yeah. and the camera just pops out and it works great.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, HD video, and then I do that even. We'll do like Tiger Team style where I've got somebody back at base just like taking in all the data and feeding them and figuring out what to do, and I'll just like one of the first things I'll do when I get into an office is I'll make a big round with the camera on and then just up that video, mm-hmm. and then he'll hit me up later and be like, I noticed this and this, check this out, go look at that, and so while you know, then I don't even have to be, like he'll pick up things I missed while I was looking around, and then I can go do one thing, you know, start rating printers, mm-hmm. And then he's reviewing all the video I sent saying, hey, ignore this, that's going to be mm-hmm. dumb, but go towards this, that looks like it's probably a wiring closet, you know, things like that.
Nice.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so like what I gotta phrase this carefully, but so like ultimately, like we're supposed to be symbiotic, right?
Mm-hmm.
It may not always be like that because of pressure put on our various teams, and you know, like to a lot of system ends, you guys are just like there to fuck up their day, or to you guys, we're just there because we're idiots and we don't know what we're doing, right? What do you think is like...
Those are severe statements.
No. These are like extremes, right? Like, yeah. I'm not saying everybody feels that way, but like, that's the extreme ends of the scale, right?
Yeah.
What do you think is the most common hurdle when you deal with blue teams? Like, what is the thing that bugs you the most that you see so much?
In flaws that we find?
Yeah, either security flaws or just like attitude flaws or whatever.
Exceptions.
I have a substantial answer to that.
Yeah, they're like, well, yeah, we realize that's still running XP, but, you know, we have this completely, that shouldn't even have been in scope, because we can't change that one, because that would be too much reasons.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes there is reasons. Literally, it's like, this is a flight navigation control for aircraft always in the sky that never land, and if we take it down, everyone dies. You're right. Like, well, that sucks. That's reason. The architecture.
And they'll write that off as an exception instead of remediating around it. Because you go, okay, yeah, I understand that you totally can't swap this machine out or do anything to it in any way. Like, that's a thing that's probably in every large enterprise. There's at least one of those somewhere. Is there a term for that? We need a term for that computer.
Oh, man.
We need to invent a colloquial. Yeah, put that on the to-do list for this talk. We'll figure that out.
I'm writing it. I'm writing it.
You can remediate around that. You can say, all right, so there's this huge vulnerability in this box, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So just set up controls for who can access that box. Say, all right, only this IP address can get to that box, and that IP address is just your jump box, and then only person XYZ can even log into that jump box. Mm-hmm. And that's the one I recommend the most is just jump boxes.
Okay.
So then you just put something in between firewall-wise, mm-hmm. one way or another, to make sure that if you're talking about something that's like, well, it's running this service and that's vulnerable, so we can't just have that out there. Sorry, well, say only this IP can connect, so at least you're really narrowing down where, you know, your attack surface.
Sure.
God, exceptions are a good one instead of remediation. My big thing right now is not just a lack of multi-factor authentication on externally or internet-facing services, mm-hmm. but an active pushback against implementing it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I see a lot when I'm, you know, presenting my reports. I go, hey, yeah, so here's this massive attack chain of how I owned all your shit. Note that it started with you not having at least two-factor authentication, and I brute-forced X, Y, and Z, and that's how I got in.
Right.
Everything south of that in this attack chain
would have been impossible and nullified if you just had multi-factor authentication. And they'll push back, and I'll have CIOs.
How do they even push back against that?
They go, I'm not going to inconvenience my users. I have 3,000 end users. We're going to piss them all off by making them use these little key fobs. And I'm like, you don't have to do any of that anymore. Like, they have the very old idea of what two-factor is. They all still think RSA tokens. Like, no, there's...
Right. I actually have something related to that. I was going to ask y'all, like, how viable in terms of, like, usability and value do you see, like, various strengthening methods like P2P disk encryption and shit like that? Stronger password policies? Like, our biggest hurdle right here isn't so much... Like, we tend to want to implement those things.
Yeah.
But we're under a policy because we're salary, right?
Yeah.
So we don't get to jump in, pop something, and stop and jump out. You know, we've got stuff we have to follow, and if we don't follow, we lose our job. And when the CEO has to go through more than like two steps to log into something, we lose our job, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a bad situation to be in, because that's how we get popped.
That's a situation we as red teamers target often, is we know the higher up you go in an organization, the more vulnerable that person's going to be due to things they put in place to make their life easier. Because they go, you know, I'm above security.
Right.
So exactly. I get exceptions to all these things on my laptop. Or I have an awesome security team, so I can use a shitty password for my email account.
And like, then we have to make exceptions.
Consistently, the higher up I go in an org, the shittier their personal security is.
Right. Do you find that usually your reports are pretty effective in combating that? Like, do they tend to...
I don't know, because we often don't see the results of that. It's rare that I'm presenting to C-levels.
Right.
It happens on occasion, but usually it's me presenting to a director or possibly a VP, and then they relay the gist of it to the C-levels. Mm-hmm. It's
and
rare that I'm face to face.
Typically, nothing changes.
And then we'll get called in for the clients that are smart enough to do repeat pen tests. I'll often come back, and you just pull up the old pen test and go, all right, let's see. Mm-hmm. Let me try all this again first. And you get about at least a 50% success rate with that. Mm-hmm. But part of it is just, you know, budget. We work on annual budgets usually. So you go, okay, when do you want to do a major project? Installing MFA in your environment. Like, that's a multi-million-dollar project that wasn't slated for this year. So I understand that's going to have to wait till at least next year. Mm-hmm. And then it takes, depending on the size of your environment, it could take that entire year to be fully implemented. That's a big problem, is just companies getting so big that they lumber under their own weight.
And a lot of times, this shocks a lot of people who aren't red teamers, but people think of a pen test as like a medical exam, where they're like, I have this lump, and I don't really know what it is. Can we biopsy that? I need to know. A lot of times when you're red teaming, the person in the company who hired you, they already know what's fucked.
Yes.
And they're not trying to learn about it. They're trying to cover their ass because they now have a report from an outside validated third party that they can wave at someone and say, I told you this was wrong. You didn't believe me. I'm telling you again with documentation. If you get popped, it's not me getting fired.
Yeah.
It's literally on you. And it's you're giving them cover their ass armor.
I would say that is the majority of my clients is that situation. They go, I know this situation's fucked. I need an unbiased third party to give me a report that I can give to my boss to say, hey, look, these guys also think that it's fucked, and this is their only job.
Right, this is what they do.
So that I can justify buying these things. And, like, those are the real boring presentations, because, like, they're not even excited that you popped a bunch of stuff. They're like, okay, like, yeah, we thought so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one? Oh, yeah, I know that one. Awesome, thank you. They're more excited that they get to, like, go say I told you so to their boss than, like, the fact that you broke into anything.
Right.
Whereas, we like you said, like, we like the we also like to say I told you so, or, like, jump up and down and yell. So, like, we like the ones where you, like, do a smash and grab and you get away with all their financial data and get to walk into that room and be like, can you confirm for me that this is regulated data of this nature? Can you confirm for me that these are your financial records? And then just when all their jaws drop and they're like,
those are pretty great.
Yeah, but those are few and far between.
True.
Got it.
So you, last night, speaking of, like, buying shit, you actually mentioned that there's, like, vendor targeting for red team versus blue team. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah. No, that is a rant I go on often.
Well, I mean, I thought it was interesting. Like, I'm more interested in how how we'd be able to fight that other than just telling them, hey, fuck you. Like,
Look at the demographic that vendors target. They're not targeting you guys. They're not targeting people who operate at our level. They're targeting the people with the buying power.
Right.
The, you know, your directors, your VPs, like and depending on the cost of whatever they're selling, who they're targeting higher up in your organization is, you know, changes. Right. And that whole red versus blue was invented by marketing companies to create little objects that you can physically imagine in your head and create definite walls and say, this is blue, this is red. And when in fact, everyone should be purple. Like, red and blue shouldn't exist because you can't set up defensive networks without understanding how the attack vectors work.
Right.
Like, you just can't. Right. You don't have to be, you know, doing the attacking. You should be, you know, playing with and practicing a lot of it. You should be doing internal penetration testing. Like, every company's blue team should have rotating pen testing duty internally. That should just be a thing, and then you hire in a third party to get a second set of eyes on something once a year.
I was going to ask
once
that.
Every 3 years, depending on your
organization. I like that plan. I think that's really.
I believe PCI requires annual pen tests, and I think you only need to do a third party every 3 years. Mm. And I haven't read PCI in a while; they may have changed.
I think it did change like a year ago or something. Like
okay,
that, yeah.
And so like the point is, like, you can be doing these pen tests internally.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I understand that, like, as a defensive guy, you're not going to be an awesome pen tester. But you're going to learn, like, you're pretty much probably going to be doing... A, you're going to be doing an Nmap scan and iterating your environment, which is something no company does. We're regularly showing up and going, here's what your environment looks like, you know, and they're like, that's not what we thought it looked like at all.
Yeah.
Like, I found all these things you didn't mention in the SOW, and they're like, what? Where are those? Can you... Do you have more information? So, like, you're going to be doing that. You're going to be doing, hopefully, vulnerability scans. Like, at least hope that you're doing that within your enterprise. And then, like, when you find the vulnerabilities, like, should, you know, start exploiting things and seeing what you can see from within there. Get a greater view of what's going on, because the vulnerability scan is not going to turn up everything that's vulnerable in your environment.
For sure. Yeah.
And so, like, once you actually start, you know, doing these regular pen tests, you start to really understand, because I mean, we're not just coming in and doing vuln scans, and then, I mean, some companies are. So watch out for those.
To hire, yeah.
Yeah, like, you should be doing this internally just as a means of being better at,
for sure.
At A, your job, B, your understanding your company's network and what's out there and how things talk to each other. Like, this is definitely something the blue team should be doing, and I don't see this. I know of one company in Michigan that is doing this with their blue team. And it's going excellently for them. I highly recommend this. And at the same time, like, as a penetration tester, you would really suck if you didn't understand what defensive things you were up against. If you didn't understand, like, how endpoint protection works and how firewalls work and how IDSs work versus IPSs, what FireEye
but
is
Johnny,
up to.
Johnny, I just want to hack.
What is hacking if not bypassing?
I know. Yeah, no.
You know, it's learning how everything works ever.
I think... we're talking about on Twitter. I'm all over Twitter all the time. But I think people were talking about this exact thing on Twitter a little bit ago. And Leslie Carhart, she was
one of my best friends.
Yeah, she's good people. Good
Absolutely.
People. She mentioned something about... she got asked, like, how to hack. With air quotes, by the way. Because I hate using it like that, too. And she said, like, yeah, start by learning the OSI model. Like, start by learning the TCP stack and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yes! Yeah,
that
like
just happened to me, and her and I had a bunch of people talking about that on Twitter. Was that the same situation?
Maybe.
I mean, it does happen a lot.
Yeah,
especially with more and more people, thinking, you know, red team sexy.
Yeah.
So you get all these kids coming out of high school, hanging out around college, going, hey, how did you learn to hack? Can you tell me how to hack?
Yeah.
And then, you know, how do you answer that? And then you start building up these things. Like, well, my main thing is, like, you have to have, like, a super huge, in-depth understanding of how TCP IP works, including a lot of the applications built into it, your HTTP, your FTP, those sorts of things.
That's like 90% of it right there.
I don't know about 90. It helps you with everything else.
Okay.
Because, you have to understand how things talk to each other at a very low level, because that's what you're fucking up. That's what you're hitting. You're screwing with the way things talk to each other in order to get around certain situations.
Yeah, 90 seems like another thing. Like, yeah. I want to say like maybe 70 to 80, and then...
Yeah. It depends what you do, too.
Like, and, right, yeah. If you have this, like, hey, how you doing?
And I just did... I was talking to... At a security academy in my city 2 days ago. And, you know, you do the Q&A at the end. I was just doing a bit on, like, what hacking was like in the 80s and 90s when...
Right.
When Deviant was only in his 50s. And... And that was fun. And you QA at the end. And, of course, your audience being students and blue teamers, because that was, you know, in an area of dense corporate population. You know, you get that question that's effectively, how did you learn to hack and work? How can I learn to hack like you? And I was like, well, how I learned was this talk I just gave for the past hour and a half where I was talking about hacking in the 80s and 90s. So I've been breaking into things for 20 years pre-Google.
Oh my god.
And I talked about BBSs and text files and Anarchist Cookbook. And
Jason Scott in here? Is this?
Well, we've had him in here. We had him in here last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Jason Scott is
2 years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
Okay.
Jason Scott is a great interview. I love having him on the air.
He's a card.
Yeah,
he is a ham.
And he's doing some great work at archive.org and textfiles.com. I mention him in my talk at length. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great dude.
One of the best presenters, too, if you've ever just seen him give a talk.
Yeah, that's why he's a great interview, because he knows how to present information in an amazing way.
He's a great, great person to just even interact with one-on-one. He's just fantastic. we have like 4 minutes left, technically, and then I think the keynote starts. So I'm going to finish it out with this. So in one of our podcast episodes, in season 0, episode 8, we did this thing where we went to Twitter and we asked like a whole bunch of InfoSec people, like, what's one thing you could tell system administrators or system engineers or something like that? And we actually have two quotes from you. The first one, I really liked.
Oh, man, this is a congressional hearing? Can you confirm that you made the following statements?
We're blue team. We do things by the book. If there's one thing we have, it's records.
I did not know people were reading my Twitter. Full disclosure. I did not
know. No, it's all right. The first one was actually pretty good. Make sure 20% of your time is spent doing, you know, non-admin engineering things.
Well, that is a thing I said.
Unrelated hobbies, yep.
I think I said that on Leslie's blog. Is that where you pulled it from?
Forums? No, this is right from Twitter.
Oh, okay.
This was at us.
He replied us.
The second one, and to close this out, I was hoping I could get clarification on this. You said, buy one of those purses that explodes into nunchucks?
That was... I'm going to bring Leslie
where
up
do I
for
get
a third
this?
Time.
I need that this was... product.
That was...
You carry a purse around?
Oh, if it exploded into nunchucks, you fucking better.
I have a vague memory of that. I will confirm that was a thing I said. Mm-hmm. It was in reference to, I am almost positive, something that Leslie Carhart had posted, and it was like a woman's self-defense thing, where it's like a purse, and like it transformed, like Transformers style, but immediately into nunchucks. Like if you just like... you like hold this end of this handle, and then that's the other thing, and you like snap it, and it's like pow, nunchucks.
Oh my God.
Can fend off any attacker because I am fully trained in the use of this weaponry.
I was searching for that and I could not find it because I was like, there's no way that's a real thing. It's got to be a real thing. And then I was looking and I couldn't find it.
I'm going to tweet Leslie, and she probably owns it by now. I don't know if you guys know, Leslie is at least 3 black belts now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always think it's funny, like, people carry weapons in self-defense and that they have no knowledge of how to use. Like, even a knife, like...
Yeah.
A pocket knife, that's the easiest thing to disarm from someone and then use against them. Like, don't carry a weapon that, A, you have not been trained in and do not regularly practice in. Like, all
it's fucking clear and swipe. Clear and swipe.
Face that way. Deviant is literally clear and swiping me while I'm trying to do a show.
We have a whole ops division. Like, we're a FizSec firm.
Really big knife.
One of the best quotes ever, though, about it will end like on knife fighting. The best thing I ever learned in any knife class. And now, like, cool, there's a marker on the table, too. A knife fight with a person, if they have a knife, it's like a toddler with a marker. And you want to get the marker away, like, you're gonna get marked. okay. It's going to happen. Just okay. resign yourself to that and, then and you're try cool. to take it on the arm.
And after you've gotten marked a few times, you're not so scared of it anymore.
Yeah, like it's just right. then
and just try to take it in unimportant places, yeah. like your wrists, apparently, are fine.
And then you're going to be walking around with a big old marker most of your arm. Yeah.
This is a life lesson.
Arm. Yeah, and you can tell people what happened. Yeah. Clear and swipe. Your mic's down, and we have...
So... We should probably do that thing where we get the stream ready for Cory Doctor, who comes on
yeah, all right.
in 1 minute. If you guys want to hang out while I get that set up.
Yeah, we can hang out. In fact, I can bring it back around by saying don't leave weapons on your network that can be used against you. Because every now and then I'll find a Cali box that somebody's That's got awesome. On their LAN.
Or even just like Netcat just lying somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, or just, yeah. SCP or FTP programs on servers that norm don't have them by default
have
that I can
no business, yeah.
Yeah, just don't leave things there that, you know, I understand you are using them for something, but that also means that whoever's walking around can pick them up and use them against you. I regularly find Kali boxes on LANs, which is great because it means that someone was attempting to do some pen testing internally
otherwise,
and not that I found somebody else some unauthorized pen testing going on. I'm gonna wrap it up there.
Yeah,
there's like I don't have any inherent hatred for sysadmins and blue teamers, especially as like an old like I miss and yeah I will say like I, people think that I work the sexy job. It has its sexy moments, but I really really miss engineering. I really loved security engineering, the building things, the making stuff work. The constant tweaking and playing with to make it better. Like, if you're an engineer at heart, like, that's one of the coolest things you could do is security engineering. And I look forward to, once I'm done learning from this, to going back and doing some more engineering. So I really do appreciate what you guys do, personally.
Thank you. Yeah, we couldn't do what we do without you guys. So.
Well, we appreciate being here. This was fun.
For better or for worse.
True.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
See you guys.
Thanks.
All right.
Yeah.
This is Johnny Christmas signing out here. We're going to get the keynote streaming for you in just a minute, so stand by while that gets set up.